This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
All right, welcome to Cousin Sal's winning weekend. We are getting oh so close to filling out those brackets on Sunday. And let me tell you, we are not in the business of bursting bubbles. No siree, Bob Knight. We've got a great show for you today. Coming up, I've got my very own top seed, fresh off hosting the Academy Awards. We have Jimmy Kimmel here.
What?
I know. I'm not sure how we got him either. We're going to talk about wagering on the Oscars, naked John Cena, the UNLV running rebels of old. Plus, he has a very interesting idea on how to bet this Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight. Also, real estate agents are busy. Kirk Cousins to Hotlanta, Derrick Henry to Baltimore, Saquon to Philadelphia, and we have the top tamperers in the game, the D3, Harry, Brother Bry, and Darren the Parlay Kid. They're going to show you how to bet some futures involving the players with new homes. FanDuel has some new regular season specials we're going to check out. But before all that, let's recap the biggest sports stories in the segment that just restructured its deal to get us under the salary cap. It's Cover 4!
Cover 1.
All right, last Sunday night saw a few surprises. One was Emma Stone winning Best Actress as a +130 underdog. There I am, a grown man in an ill-fitting tuxedo, marking off his award show gambling wins and losses. At the same time, a new high and low for me. But right before midnight Eastern, another mild upset occurred when presenter Adam Schefter opened up the envelope and announced that Russell Wilson planned on signing with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Turns out, Mr. Unlimited was limited to the veteran minimum of $1.2 million for 1 year, but don't you dare worry about that guy. The Broncos will be picking up the tab on the rest of his $39 million salary. It's kind of like when you go out for an expensive meal and your cheapskate buddy Harry says, "Oh, at least let me pay the tip." Well, that's what the Steelers are doing. They are paying for just the tip of Russell Wilson. And at first glance, this might seem like a mismatch made in heaven. You know, Pittsburgh is a blue-collar town. Russell Wilson is more of a Versace-collared quarterback. The Steel City is loaded with factory workers who bleed black and gold. They need a paunchy quarterback whose name you can't pronounce. Not to mention, what is Russ's wife, Ciara, going to do in Pittsburgh? Ride the logjammer at Kennywood while slamming down Primanti Brothers sandwiches? She doesn't strike me as a French fries on top of pastrami type of gal. Anyway, you know, prior to this Russell Hustle and Bustle Man Muscle signing, the Steelers were 75-1 to win the Super Bowl, and now they are still 75-1. And if you're Russell Wilson, you have to wear this proudly. Hey, we're no worse than we were 24 hours ago. It's clear that adding Russ was a cheap fix to a bigger, more expensive problem, like trying to duct tape the bridge that collapsed down near Frick Park. Listen, if Russell Wilson really wanted to help the Steelers, he'd have his wife Ciara remix a new version of Renegade. Admit it, Steelers fans, it's time.
Cover 2!
All right, for anyone who still cares, I'm about to sum up the current state of professional boxing. Last Friday, Anthony Joshua won the biggest heavyweight fight of the year at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
He did?
Yeah, he did. It was Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific time, just about when everyone I know is trying to figure out how to knock off work early for the weekend. Joshua KO'd UFC's Francis Ngannou over in Saudi Arabia. It was the vicious right hand not heard round the world. Honestly, this should have been the biggest boxing news of the week, and yet it wasn't. Nope, that honor was reserved for social media influencer slash boxer slash noted jackhole Jake Paul announcing he would be fighting soon-to-be 58-year-old Iron Mike Tyson. Yep, Mike Tyson used to knock people into, as he says, Bolivian in mere seconds. Now, he's a 4-1 underdog versus a man who is better known for his YouTube videos featuring dirt bike stunts in a pool. And if you thought Jake Paul was annoying before, just wait until he beats one of the most feared heavyweights of all time. He's going to be more unbearable than a drunk Pats fan on St. Patrick's Day. I just don't understand how this happened. When did pro boxing become less sport and more MTV celebrity deathmatch? In this new era of fisticuffs, Screech, God rest his soul, would be the featherweight champion of the world. And so it's social media menace Jake Paul fighting Tyson, now 30 years removed from his prime, mellowed out on gummies. And I'm telling you, this should be considered elder abuse. This is like dating Anna Nicole Smith after the Playboy years. I think I speak for fight fans everywhere when I say this is how I want to remember Mike Tyson. Or like this.
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Mike Tyson needs to back out of this charade, save himself any potential humiliation, and save the rest of us $79.99. Unless he promises to chomp off both of Jake Paul's ears, in which case I'm in for at least 17 grand.
Cover three.
Hey, congratulations to Purdue Senior Center. No, not the facility for the elderly. Purdue Senior Center, Zach Edey, the favorite to once again win the Wooden Award for Player of the Year. That's him. I'm congratulating him because last Sunday, after his final home game, Edey had his number 15 raised to the rafters of Mackey Arena. He's the first Purdue All-American to have his number hung while his career is still active. And this is great news and well-deserved, but couldn't the school have waited a little? I mean, the season isn't even over yet. I'm not saying you need to be old and wrinkled before they give you a jersey honoring ceremony, but Edey's gonna potentially need that jersey for another month. I mean, can we at least wait to see if the Boilermakers beat the 16th seed before throwing this massive honor at him? I know seniors skip classes, but it's not like he was gonna just flee town. Was Purdue that worried that he wouldn't want to return to West Lafayette, Indiana, once he left for the NBA? Okay, possibly. I take it all back. No need to take chances. Good job by you, Purdue, making Zach Edey your Purdue.
Number four!
All right, this Sunday, known as Selection Sunday, 68 teams chosen by the College Hoops Selection Committee to play in the NCAA tournament. It will all be revealed over the course of an hour, and I like it. Selection is not my favorite Sunday. By definition, it can't be in the top 22 Sundays, but I put it behind all of football Sundays and ahead of the fourth round of the Corrales Punta Cana Championship. That's not a curse word, that's an actual golf tournament. But I was thinking about it, and I'm not really sure why we enjoy Selection Sunday so much. We sit there for an hour, laser-focused on whether the 73rd best team can leapfrog their way into the field of 68, as if 13-loss Utah has a chance of winning this thing anyway. Seriously, it's occurred to me that the people who are interested in this are hopelessly pathetic. And by people, I mean me. Let me introduce you to my personal NCAA basketball grid. Here it is. Can you see this mess? I have the teams I think are in the tournament on the left, the bubble teams on the right, and of those bubble teams, I have a nice color-coordinated system outlining the first four byes, the next four teams that are in, the first four out, the next four out. Blue, red, yellow, and green. This pad is where deranged Skittles go to die. And yes, there are 750,000 websites I can go to get this information, but instead I insist on creating my own arts and crafts seminar that requires me to use highlighters for like a dozen hours a week. Why? Because I am a creature of habit who is maybe trying desperately to avoid his family. That's why. But the point is, I think we need to make Selection Sunday more interesting. And I have some ideas that have nothing to do with my insane scribbling. First, I propose we have the Bachelor come out and give the teams left out of the field a carnation. Not quite a rose, but better than nothing. Next, if bracketologist Joe Lenardi gets even one prediction wrong, Indiana State's Bobby Avila, aka Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, sits on his head. I love that guy. Don't leave him out, please. And finally, we have naked John Cena bring out the envelope announcing the last team in the field. I'm joking. Of course, this honor has to go to naked Clark Kellogg. Ugh. I know. Always need to be careful of that South region. All right, that does it for Cover 4. Now it's time for my irrationally angry attempt to make rational sense of a somewhat irrational bet. It's wagering. Okay, normally I reserve any bet ache or bad beat talk for my Against All Odds podcast with the D3, but I'm going to give you a little glimpse into my weird wagering misfortunes here on Cousin Sal's winning weekend. Yes, the weekends are winners. The weekdays, maybe not so much. Last Thursday, Steph Curry suffered an ankle injury against the Bulls. That was at night. Bummer for Steph, but even a bigger Bummer for me, as that same morning, I bet on Steph's Warriors at minus 128 to make the playoffs. Yep, vintage Sal bet. And it seems my wallet also suffered an injury, as the next day, the odds shifted against me, of course. The Warriors minus Curry for the time being are now plus 140 to make it to the postseason, and I'm not done yet. There's talk of him maybe returning tomorrow against the Hollywood LeBrons, but I'll admit, when Steph went down, I did not hold back on the expletives. I said a lot of things that would make Joe Pesci raise an eyebrow, but not once did the words, "I should be refunded," come out of my mouth. I didn't cry about being reimbursed like a lot of these entitled Gen Zers do. This does not fall under the "I found a hair in my bed, now give me a free parlay appetizer" category. That's not how it works. If I made the bet and every star and every team the Warriors played against for the rest of the year was lost to salmonella poisoning, I wouldn't expect FanDuel to void my wager. Right? They wouldn't? All right. In any case, I'm currently working on certification with my firm, but as of now, there is no such thing as bettor's insurance as it pertains to future. So everyone, just change your doom and gloom diapers and quit crying about your bad luck. You bet what you bet and you don't get upset. That's my rager. Here's my wager. I'm doubling down on the dubs, kind of, specifically Steph Curry. According to the sportsish guy, he needs to play just 6 more games to qualify for Clutch Player of the Year. An award he was a lock to win a few weeks ago. And I'm jumping back on. There it is. Steph, minus 160 to win Clutch Player of the Year. I already have this bet from a couple months ago, and I'm doing it again. Yes, indeed. You can go ahead and file this one under MRI, I'm a Glutton for Punishment. Coming up, the D3 NFL free agency means players with new teams and even better, new wagers. We'll check out some Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, Derrick Henry player props. And after the break, he just hosted the Oscars for the 4th time, and now he's here on our show. It's in his contract, he has to be here. My cousin and yours, Jimmy Kimmel, next here on Cousin Sal's Winning Weekend.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
All right, welcome back to Cousin Sal's Winning Weekend. Let's bring in our guest. Last Sunday, he hosted the Academy Awards, the biggest night in Hollywood. And just a few days later, he's here starring on my TV-ish podcast over Zoom. That just goes to show you how fickle this industry can be. Appreciate the good times, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, the host of Jimmy Kimmel Live and my best supporting cousin, Jimmy Kimmel. What's happening, Jimmy?
Hi, Cousin Sal. You know, people have been asking me, what are you going to do? How are you going to follow? How are you going to top the Oscars? And this is it. This is like when you win the Super Bowl and you go to Disneyland.
Right, exactly. This is your Disneyland. That's good because I have a giant turkey leg for you at the end of this.
Oh, good.
I do just like Disneyland. You did a great job. And I'm not just saying that because you let me live in your office for a decade. It was the highest rated show in 4 years, I think. Right. Is that what they said?
That's what they said. Yeah. I mean, who knows? But that's what they said.
And do you feel, I don't know if you get credit for this, enough credit for this. I hear Barbie Hammer all over the place.
Of course not. And here's how it goes. If the ratings go down, you are blamed. And if they go up, it was for some other reason. So I know the truth is it has almost nothing to do with me. People are either excited about the movies or they're not excited about the movies and they're either going to watch or they're not going to watch. So we did, we did what we could. We put together a pretty good promo leading up to the Oscar show. A lot of people seem to have watched it. People seem to have enjoyed it. And then you just kind of, I worry about the ratings on my show, not the ratings on the Oscars.
Interestingly enough, you do not get nervous. And I don't even have to ask you if this is true, because there's now empirical evidence supporting the fact that you don't stress out. You are one of our producers
checked your Aura Ring, right?
Yeah,
I think about 6:30 or 7 o'clock. It was Aaron. And she noticed that at 4 p.m., right, when the show was starting, your stress reading was at an all-time low, not even just low.
It was at
low-ish.
Zero. Yeah, it was at zero. Hey, Josh, will you grab my phone and bring it to me? I'll show it to you. It's crazy. I don't know what's wrong with me. I mean, I am, you know, on this ring that measures your, you know, it's attached to your body. It measures your stress. I'm not sure how it knows what your stress level is, but it seems to know some. Thank you, Josh. And you know, almost every day I have a pretty high level of stress, but when I'm doing this show or weirdly, like my stress level was even lower than it is when I do my regular show. But let's see,
are you AI? Are you like a real human being? Maybe that should be checked next. Is there a ring
I
for
don't
that?
Know. It's definitely not healthy. Whatever it is that I've done. But it's really crazy. Okay, so you can see it. I don't know if it matters if you can see or not, but you see this low at zero? That's right when the Oscar show started.
What the hell goes on? That's so crazy. I wish we could. Can you bet on that? Is there going to be a time where you could bet on the host's aura, the stress reading on the aura ring?
You know, it's weird. It peaked right at 6:30 p.m. I was at the highest possible stress level at 6:30. I don't even know what's going on. You know what I think? I think this thing's probably not accurate. I don't know. This makes no sense.
No, it's more fun making it like you're a crazy person, I think. That's
but there is some there is consistency because I do look at it. And every night when I'm hosting the show, that's when my stress level is at its lowest. And maybe that means that when I retire, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, I think it does mean that. I do love betting on the Oscars. This is a gambling show, so I should mention betting.
Yes.
My friends laugh, but I find it just as thrilling. And I'm not kidding. I get just as much of a rush, you know, dollar for dollar, when I wait for the presenter to tell me if my bet on Emma Stone to win Best Actress won, as I do for like a 3-pointer going down or a touchdown reception or something. Is that stupid?
I think it's more fun to bet on these types of events. I mean, how much would you guess that we won on Dancing with the Stars all in, like over the course of all the seasons that we bet on this?
Many, many thousands of dollars. Like you wouldn't even have to do this Oscars gig, really.
Like around $20,000, right? I mean,
we get more than the actual participants, right?
we might. And because here's why I think it's more fun, because when you bet on sports, you're betting on, you're betting on some kind of physical achievement. Whereas in this case, you're trying to guess what other people are thinking. And I think it makes it more fun, like because, you know, people are voting and want to know what the masses are thinking and how in tune you are with that. And I think that makes it a lot more fun.
Well, it's interesting because not everyone is on the same page with this, not even within the same sports books, same odds providers. Like some states for FanDuel didn't allow it. They don't allow voting on any event that, you know, is contingent on voting. Like even I don't even think you could vote on the Heisman Award in some states. But it's kind of hypocritical, though, isn't it? Because boxing and UFC is voted on if the match goes to a decision. Right. So what is the difference?
Yeah, well, I think that it's, you know, you could have a knockout. I mean, certainly in boxing, you know, but I think there is a difference. If I ran a gambling website, I don't know that I would allow betting on award shows because, well, we've learned from the envelope mix up. There are, I mean, listen, there are at least five people who know what happened, right? So just right there in sports, there are zero people who know what happened. You know, if you have to actively fix the fight, that's one thing. But I guess they probably do it just for promotional reasons, right? I mean, ultimately, they don't let you bet a ton of money.
They don't let you get rich off of this. But so you would say you would not take chances because of the tomfoolery that may be even after I told you how much it means to me to bet on these things.
Specifically, okay. There is a guy named Tom Foolery who's in charge of. Yeah. So, yeah, he is not to be trusted.
Part of the price. Okay. So speaking of like pugilistic events that you shouldn't bet on, maybe there was a heavy pro wrestling presence at the Oscars this year. John Cena, The Rock, myself in the audience. Retired, undefeated. We basically just needed The Undertaker to come out and present the in memoriam. But Guillermo was pretty sloshed
beforehand.
I know. I didn't put it all together. But next year, the Cena bit was great. He was supposed to, for anyone who didn't see it, I can't imagine by now, but he was supposed to run out nude and present the award for best costume. He was supposed to be a streaker, essentially. You took a clip from many years back when this happened at the Oscars, and then there was a skit ensued. I know Standards and Practice had a heart attack about this bit before and during, but as far as you're concerned, did it go as well as you imagined?
Yeah, it went, you know, some things go, so I actually think it went better than, it went as well as I possibly could have hoped. But with that said, I knew it was going to be really funny because even in rehearsal where people are, where we didn't have John Cena, you know, we had a stand in for John Cena. We got a huge laugh. And it's funny because we expected there to be a laugh after John said the word costumes.
Costumes.
But it was just an absolutely huge laugh. And to get a laugh like that after just saying a word, like, you know, just a random word like costumes is pretty rare. And, you know, you have a pretty funny visual on your hands.
Absolutely. Now, I know you've hosted this four times, which is weird because you swore in 1986 when Power of Love didn't win for Best Original Song that you were done with the Oscars. And but anyway, something happened and you went back on your word. You've hosted. And I know you went over the Oscars and the host with Simmons. He was super boring. But let me reset this a little bit. So Bob Hope, he's like Bill Russell. I feel like now I'm Simmons saying like the Bill. He's like Bill Russell. He hosted 19 times between 1940 and 1978. We looked this up. He was 37 when he first hosted. And 75 when he hosted his final Oscars. So
is that true? Wow.
I
didn't know Bob Hope was ever 37.
Yeah, I would say 75. He started and ended at 75 also somehow. No, but I think you could get there. 75, if you go to 75, that gives you 17 more years. You really just need to do 16 of those 17 to beat him. It's not impossible. Oh, wow.
Well, there's one condition under which I would shoot for Bob Hope's record, presuming that they would be interested in having me that many times. If they promise to rename the airport, which in Burbank, which is named Bob Hope International Airport, if they promise to take his name off it and name it after me, I would really think about it.
I think that's good. But you have this is your bit where you talk about how people get mad at when flights are delayed at Hope. Oh, I was at Hope for 3 hours. Like, right. Isn't there a negative connotation? Well,
there is, except for everybody loves the Burbank airport. So there's negative connotation there.
That's true. Okay. So here's why you're the best. You're better than all these guys. You provide food for the audience during the Oscars. Jack Lemmon didn't give a crap if everyone in the room starved. That's one thing I will say, but you're not built like that. And it makes sense because everyone's famished. It's a long night. Comedy clubs feed people. I know they want to make money too, but if the reason is it leads to a more relaxed, less tense atmosphere. And so you provided this box full of goodies and forgot you had a pretzel. This is why you're the best. You had a pretzel in there and with yellow and spicy mustard. Ballparks aren't even doing this anymore, but not you. You had the pretzel. You had like one movie candy box and there was a water, right?
That's all credit for that goes to the guy at Chappie's Pretzels who put me, you know, he knows what mustard is. He shouldn't even have put that yellow mustard in the box. As far as I'm concerned, it should have been brown mustard only. That's the only acceptable mustard for a pretzel. I just think if you choose yellow mustard for a pretzel, you probably don't care about mustard on a pretzel in the first place. So, you know, just eat the salt and enjoy it.
Or you're a child. If you're a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7, whatever. There's a cutoff, I think, age-wise. But I don't know.
Yeah, there were no children at this event. Right. So, I know. You know what I should have done? Oh, God. You know, again, another idea you should have given me beforehand.
Yeah.
I should have done a little. And I, of course, would cross-reference the DNA samples to make sure I was targeting the right people. But I should have gone back through the boxes to see who had the yellow mustard and who picked the brown.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, I could have humiliated so many of Hollywood's biggest stars.
Well, I'll pick through the trash and do it now. I know it's a few days late, but my wife is like, Melissa's like, don't open that. It's going to smell. I was like, I don't care. Yeah. I ever cared about smelling, I opened that mustard, slobbered it right on there.
Here's a question that I don't know we've ever discussed this before. Like, how do you open a mustard packet?
I grab it from the top. I put my teeth in the middle of the top and slice it down the middle.
Does anyone not open the mustard packet with their teeth? Does anyone open it with their hands? I don't think so.
They're taking a big chance if they do, because with the teeth, if it goes awry, you could kind of catch it with your mouth and everything. Yeah. That's why mustard ends up on your clothes, doing it the conventional way, I guess.
It's also much harder to open it. But then you think about it, you're like, this is something that's been handled repeatedly and you're putting it right in your mouth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Like they say that about lemons, too. Like, don't drop the lemon right in your drink. Just squeeze it. I'm like, no, I don't care. That's why how it is.
That is why Jack Lemmon did not bring food for the audience.
Same thing comes around. Yeah. I did want to mention. So the director of 20 Days in Mariupol, am I saying it right?
Mariupol.
All right. Yeah. He's giving his acceptance speech and it's pretty heavy. He's talking about the war in Ukraine. And at that moment, I look over and my wife has a fistful of juji fruits, courtesy of you. And I was thinking I would pay all the money I want off of Emma Stone if they would cut away to this. And it's your camera guys, too. It's mostly your Jimmy Kimmel Live camera guys. And I'm trying to get there was one right in front of me, but he couldn't wheel around in time. It would have been great.
We had a moment that was almost as bad where the band accidentally played the I'm Just Ken song at that moment, I think, right?
Or right, that's right.
Something like that. It was like they had it out of order. I don't know whose fault it was, but it seemed quite inappropriate following that speech.
By the way, I just got a note. This is real from my producer, Babyface Joel Solomon. He said at 6:30 is when Ken was being performed. That was your highest.
Oh, I was probably sexually aroused at that moment.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. Is that what it is? Okay. It all makes sense. All right. The sexually aroused Jimmy Kimmel and I will be back to talk March Madness, and Mike Tyson will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
All right, we're back with Jimmy Kimmel. It's Jimmy Kimmel Live weekdays, 11:35 on ABC. He just hosted the Academy Awards. Now on Sunday, he's going to be hosting Selection Sunday. He told me during the break that Bill Walton is going to be presenting the play-in teams in the nude. Is that right? Was I not supposed to say that? He won't come back
entirely nude. There will be an envelope covering his right. Gigantic private parts. Yes.
That's good. That's good. Everyone should do that now in any kind of presentation. You set it in motion. So the tournament, the NCAA tournament begins next week. You attended UNLV. I don't know that you attended classes, but actually you have a doctorate from that institution, right? Even though you're dozens of credits away. Yeah.
An honorary doctorate, which most doctors have told me is meaningless. But to me, if I graduated from UNLV, it would be relatively meaningless. So I don't see what the difference is, really.
Right. But you have something even more meaningful. You were there during the heyday of the Running Rebels.
Probably the funniest, I think, memory I have was going to the PCAA at that time. And it wasn't the Big West, the Mountain West. It was the PCAA. And we went to the PCAA tournament in Inglewood at the Forum. We drove out in a van. There were five guys and we went to the game. UNLV won. And on the way to our hotel, we see Tark and we see the assistant coaches and Tark's wife, Lois, walking back to their hotel. And so we start screaming out the window. Of course, we're wearing Rebel stuff. We start screaming out the window, Jerry, Jerry, we're screaming at Tark. And he waves us over. He says, come here, come here. He waves us over. We pull this van. Again, this is a van full of one adult and then four drunk teenagers, me being one of them. And he goes, will you guys take Lois back to the hotel? He said, yeah, okay. So Lois Tarkanian, his wife, gets into the van. with us. She has rosary beads in her hand, which is probably a good idea. She still, you know, she would pray through the whole game. It was like she was really like anxious. And she continued praying in the van, which was probably wise. And we drove Lois. He just put Lois in our van and went off with the other coaches to talk about the next
game. Wow.
And we delivered Lois to the Hilton or wherever.
Yeah. Wow. And no one tried to get frisky with her or anything like that. You were very respectful.
I hope. Oh, yeah. Extremely respectful. All, you know, listen, the Tarkanian, that family is their royalty to us in Las Vegas.
I was thinking about, though, NIL, what it would mean to that specific team right now. I think Larry Johnson would probably own part of the Stardust. Like, I'm trying to think, what would be the limitations?
Yeah, no, they'd each have their own hamburger at McDonald's, you know, be like, it was really a big deal. Yeah, these guys, they probably would have. It's a shame because, well, not all those guys got drafted and made a lot of money in the NBA. But I will say Las Vegas takes good care of their beloved former Runnin' Rebels.
Right. But it would have been interesting. Even the local, like Miller's Outpost, probably would have signed Anderson Hunt or something to some commercial deal or something. Right.
They probably did anyway. Let's be honest.
In 1990 and 91. So UNLV beats Duke by 30 in the finals in 90. And then in 1991, they have a 45 game win streak snapped. They lost 79-77. Did you hate Duke like the rest of the country?
Did I hate Duke? Yeah. I still hate Duke. Oh. I hate Christian Laettner. I don't love Bobby Hurley. I don't like, you know, I hate Duke. And in fact, it's funny because sometimes you go back in life, like, you know, I always loved Magic and I love the Lakers and I hated Larry Bird and I hated, you know, Kevin McHale and Danny Ainge, all these guys. Still not crazy about Danny Ainge, but you know, you go back now and you start to feel fondness for your rivals or your rivals who didn't know they were your rivals. And I think like now I love Larry Bird, you know, and I feel like people in Boston see Magic and they love Magic. We went through some kind of a war together or something. But I do not have that feeling about Indiana or Duke, neither of those schools. I still really? Hate them. I still
It'll never
hate
penetrate.
Him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still don't like Brent Musburger because he he quite specifically cost UNLV a game against Oklahoma by intervening. The officials came over and asked him if the guy's foot was on the line. He said, yeah, it was. And then they did the replay and it wasn't. And the call had been made and it cost him a point. They lost the game by a point. So I hold grudges.
Exactly. Real quick. Mike Tyson, Jake Paul, July 20th.
We might have to go to that.
I was thinking you might be fishing. It's going to have to, we'll pull you from fishing. But I have to say, this fight upsets me. And let me give you everyone a little history with you and Mike Tyson. Because it hasn't always been good with you and Mike Tyson. You were a correspondent for K-Rock out here in L.A.
Yeah,
and right. I went with you. There was a press conference leading up to the bite fight, the Holyfield Tyson. I had only been living in L.A. for like 3 weeks and you went out there and everyone's kissing Tyson's ass. And then you ask him, you remember
it was
what
a huge press conference. You remember there were hundreds of people there. And as I recall, I asked Mike, why can't you behave yourself?
That's right. Why can't you just behave yourself?
And he got very mad and he didn't know me. I mean, you know, I was just some punk sports reporter from the radio and he got very mad. He was like, why can't I behave myself? Why can't I behave myself? And not only did he get mad, but there were a bunch of guys looking to kind of get in his good graces who I think we ran to the car, right?
You had your DAT recorder, right? The DAT player there. Yeah. And that because we didn't know if anything was going to be picked up, but it ended up being some outlets did pick it up. But yeah, he's basically like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm not behaving myself to your liking or something. He said,
I thought it was a perfectly reasonable question to ask. And yet I remember watching ESPN that night and I don't remember who was on air, but they're like, and there's always some joker at the thing. And they played the clip and denounced me even though they played the clip. But was scary. That was scary and thrilling.
Yeah, really good. And so, all right. So then a few years later, probably 5 years later, you have Jimmy Kimmel Live. It's your first year. And we had co-hosts for the first year, much of the first year. someone would co-host for a week, right? And they'd stand in and they'd do bits. Yeah. And Mike Tyson was one of the co-hosts.
Make no mistake. I always loved Mike Tyson. I was just trying to be funny, and I didn't know that I would. I thought maybe he would laugh, but when I asked that question, he was at that time. This is like before the Hangover movie. This is like when Mike Tyson was still in kind of an unknown quantity when it came to being part of comedy of any kind, really. And
being part
of
society. Yeah.
When I made my list of people who I wanted to co-host the show, he was right at the top of the list. I was very, very excited about having him. And I knew we would have fun together. And we did have fun together. And he turned out to be, you know, a very different person than I expected him to be, much more intelligent and much more sensitive. And I've told a story about I was shooting something with him for a Christmas special we were doing. Yeah. And I got a call from my older son's school. My son, Kevin, had been, misbehaving in some way. And so I had to drive. I said, I'm so sorry, Mike. Is it possible that you could wait? I have to go to my son's school and pick him up and bring him back here. Something happened. And he's like, yeah, no problem. So he sat there and waited for me for almost 2 hours. Yeah. And then I got back and I was like, thank you so much. I'm so sorry. And he said, can I talk to your son? I said, yeah, sure. And my son, I think, was around probably 9 or 10 years old at the time. And they sat down on the steps leading down to our theater. And I'll just never forget it. Mike Tyson just sat there and gave him a little talking to. He said, you know, I didn't do so good when I was in school. And, you know, he went through this like whole thing and you have to, you know, and you got to listen to your dad and stuff. And I just thought, like, who is this person? Like, I've never been more wrong about anyone I've ever even thought of than him.
He basically asked Kevin, why can't you just behave yourself? Which is ironic, is what you
asked. Yeah, he kind of did, didn't he? You're right. Yeah. It did.
No, that's
really
great.
Truly came full circle.
Turned him around. He really hasn't given you trouble since. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Now for the most part, he's been good. Yeah.
So here's my problem with this fight. Jake Paul is a -500 favorite, which means he's probably going to win.
Okay.
And I don't want to see Tyson get embarrassed by a guy who was famous for driving a dirt bike into his friend's pools, right?
I had some detailed thoughts about this morning.
Okay.
I don't even know if I should say this. In fact, before you post this, we need to get this bet in, okay?
Yeah.
We're going to bet draw.
Oh, interesting.
Because you remember that joke of a fight with Roy Jones?
That was an exhibition, they labeled it. I don't know what the difference is.
This is gonna have to be an exhibition, right?
I think it's gonna be like an 8-round. All of Paul's fights are 8 rounds. I think they're trying to legitimize it.
Well, will it be sanctioned though? I mean, it could be 8 rounds. It doesn't necessarily mean it's gonna be. I don't know.
Yeah,
okay.
I think his that's how his are, but yeah.
If it is classified as an exhibition, I want to bet a draw because I think Tyson clearly won that fight against Jones. It was totally fixed, right? So I want to bet fixed. That's what I would like to do.
All right. See, this is why the Academy and FanDuel has problems with these kinds of things. You're right. All right. So we'll bet draw. I'll find out what those odds are. I feel like I was going to say, I don't know, even know if I'm going to pay for this, but as of now, I don't think it's a paid. Netflix might just let you have it for free, which makes me think this could be one of the biggest fights ever.
I mean, really, like that's kind of a good deal when you think about how much these pay-per-view fights cost.
Yeah, for sure. And they're getting
it's
in
like
on the
4 months of Netflix. Yeah.
All right. So we're betting a draw. That's fun. Yeah.
Draw. Jimmy? Also, I want to bet Tyson to win and draw. Those are come on. Who are we kidding here? This is ridiculous.
I know, but he's 58. He's going to be 58 when they fight. It's. I hate this.
Do you remember when ABC gave the green light for me to fight Mike Tyson 20 years ago?
Oh, right.
I have the full email trail. In fact, the only reason that didn't happen is because Mike himself was, and Mike's had the most common sense of any of us and said, no, I am not fighting you. I will murder you. You will die if I fight you.
He did the same thing with us. Remember, I was going to pillow fight him, right? Pillow fought like a Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker, and you brought him in there. You're like, pillow fight my cousin. So I was like, I can, I'll kill him. And he's like, oh no, he's pretty good. I was like, no, I know what he's saying. He's going to lose his mind and kill me. Yeah.
Do you remember when I went sparring with him over at the gym across the street? And I said, come on, hit me one. I was like, hit me one time. I want to know what it feels like. And I said, hit me hard. I want to know what it feels like. And he said, no, I'm not going to do it. And he said, I remember so well what he said. He says, once I start, I can't stop. I was like, okay, don't hit me.
I feel like you should maybe train Mike Tyson for this, like the late great Carl Weathers did for Rocky, running on the beach to Malibu. I think it would help.
I am 0-1 as far as being in the ring goes. I was in the ring with Manny Pacquiao. You remember that? And he did not win that fight. And I feel like I may have had something to do with that.
All right. Well,
do you remember that? Yeah. I wound up alone in the room with Manny Pacquiao in the moments before the fight. They cleared everyone out. Manny's like, no, let him stay. It was just the two of us standing there. And I was saying stupid shit and he was laughing. I was like, he shouldn't be laughing right before this fight. I was like, wow, he's so relaxed. I mean, he's gonna kill this guy. And
we should have checked his aura ring at the time, but I think you loosened him up. All right, Jimmy, you've been great. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, cousin Sal.
I feel like I should give you an award. Do you want to take something? I have that big gold helmet that Jerry Jones gave you and you gave to me. So
I'll come back by the house and I'll just pick something out this weekend.
Okay. Sounds good. Weekdays, 11:35, Jimmy Kimmel Live. We'll be back with D3 and more on Cousin Sal's.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Hey, the NCAA tournament hasn't even started yet, but these guys are always ready for their one shining moment, especially the top of their heads, always shining. Here they are, my wizards of wagering, my gurus of gambling, my barons of betting, my overlords of the odds of D3, Harry, Brother Bry, and Darren the Parlay Kid. What's happening, fellas?
What's going on, Sal?
How we doing, Sal?
What's going on, buddy?
Doing good, doing well. I just talked to my cousin, Jimmy Kimmel. He says hi, by the way. We were talking about how Larry Johnson and those running rebels of the early 90s would have had monster NIL deals back in the day. And then, the captain of the Riverboat Casino, he overheard us. He's always eavesdropping. And he posed the good question, which college basketball player from the past would have earned the most NIL money in his day? So we have, he gave us four options. Magic Johnson, Michigan State, obviously 3-1. Michael Jordan, you heard of him, UNC, 5-1. Christian Leitner from Duke, 7-1. Bryant Big Country Reeves, Oklahoma State, 135-1. Or you can take the field at even. All right, let's start it off with you, Harry. Who's your pick? Who would have raked in the most NIL cash?
Well, I'm a big Syracuse fan, so I'm going to go against this. I'm going to take the rival. I'm going to take Georgetown's Patrick Ewing. Mm. He was there at Georgetown from 1982 to 85. Look, I can see Magic, Sal, but he was only there for 2 years at Michigan State. Patrick Ewing, 4 years, led the Big East all 4 years in boards and blocks, shot 63, 57, 66, and 63% from the field in all those years. But his style, his aura, the team, Georgetown, the Big East was around, but no, they had small schools, St. John's, Providence. But Georgetown was the team that came around when Patrick Ewing was there. This team was unstoppable. They went to the finals twice. He was kind of a bully with John Thompson and everything like that. And then he went to the
NBA. Right, Harry?
I'm a little screwed up here. I'm a little pumped up for Ewing.
Did you make an NIL deal with no dose? What happened?
Remember, he was also...
All right. We got it. Patrick Ewing is your answer. There you go. I think he sweat all over Harry there. All right.
Sal, remember, just real quick, he was the guy who had he started the t-shirt underneath the uniform.
All right.
The knee pads, and he was amazing.
Okay, well, I don't know why that translates to NIL. Okay, all right, Parlay Kid, let's see if you could pick up.
Yeah, look, I like what Harry's saying there, Sal.
You do?
Several years later, though, we had basically the newer version.
He made the Big East.
of Patrick Ewing, and that would be Shaquille O'Neal. Averaged 27, 14, and 5 his sophomore year at LSU, setting all types of records. And kind of unlike Patrick, Shaquille had a tremendous personality, very well liked during his college years. Ewing often got booed off the court during his college years. They hated him. The opponents hated him. And so I'll take Shaquille. You know, his nickname in college was The Deal. That was actually his nickname, Shaquille The Deal O'Neal, because he probably was taking many, many deals under the table as it was, Sal. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, that's a good analysis. All right, Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going with Christian Laettner here. Look, I think it needs to be somebody who had an amazing four-year career, and Laettner had one of the best college careers of all time. He made it to the Final Four in all 4 years, lost in the finals sophomore year, then won back-to-back championships. You throw in a shot in the perfect game against Kentucky. Look, this guy was the most loved and most hated guy in the country. When you think college basketball, you think Duke. When you think Duke, you think Christian Laettner. And just think, Laettner was chosen. He was such a star. Laettner was chosen over Shaq for that dream team in 92 here. So I think NIL money would have been insane for this guy.
He might have even like starred in a movie. He might have been like a villain in one of the Batman movies. He was that hated. All right, now, fine answers, fellas, but you failed the test. The answer is Michael Jordan. I hate to be boring with this, but for what I get, 5-1 odds on Jordan? Yeah, that's a steal. It's a trick question. First of all, he got $2.5 million from Nike the second he left Chapel Hill. And all the endorsements he got, McDonald's, Gatorade, Coca-Cola, Wheaties, Chevy, he received almost all of those immediately after he left North Carolina. They would have stayed with him had he remained in North Carolina. I would say Magic is close, but I don't think the big money was there in the late 70s, early 80s, as it was just a few years later with the sneaker deals. Jordan wins again, like Mike, if we could be like Mike, if only. I would say, though, pretty good odds at 135-1 for Big Country, because Big Country could have got Country Time, could have got Country Croc, the country's best yogurt. He would have nailed all of those. All right, I hope the captain is happy with our responses. Let's switch things over to the NFL. Free agency kicked off on Wednesday, and it was frantic. Lots of big names moving to new teams. Brother Brian, you called it just a few weeks ago on this very show. Russell Wilson would end up in Pittsburgh. Good job by you. But now, FanDuel's offering prop specials for many of those players on new teams. So let's each pick one of our favorites. Harry, you going to go Patrick Ewing again?
No, I'm going to go Derrick Henry. I'm going to go Derrick Henry now with the Baltimore Ravens to have at least 1,000 yards rushing. Look, last year with the Titans, they were 28th in the NFL in total yards, 29th passing. So that put a ton of pressure on the running game. And he still had over 1,050 yards in a lackluster season. Now he's going to be with Baltimore. Baltimore led the NFL in rushing last year. They were a top five run blocking offensive line. And look, with him and Lamar Jackson here on the same team, who knows what they can be capable of. I'm going to go Henry, over 1,000 yards. He led the NFL in rushing for the last 5 years. And Sal also, 1,000 yards rushing in five of the last six. Henry goes for 1,000.
All right. I think I saw it as low as 975 or so. So you can get a good number there on FanDuel. Parley Kid, Jerry Jeudy. I mean, all these guys have screwed us in fantasy, but tell us why you like Jerry Jeudy.
Well, I don't really like Jerry Jeudy. I just like the number I'm getting here with Jerry Jeudy, getting a plus number to go over 750 yards receiving at plus 105. And I'll tell you why I like it, Sal. Even though he was a very underwhelming player in Denver, in three of his 4 years, he went over 750 yards. And the 1 year he didn't, it was because of injury. He only played 10 games, was actually on pace to go over that number as well. So he could have won over four out of 4 years. And now he's getting a fresh start in a new system. He's a clear number two on this team. He's going to see a lot of action. Deshaun Watson, I think, is going to really like this kid. He's turning 25, entering the prime of his career. He has been a huge disappointment to date, but he just has to be a slight improvement for me to go over 750 yards here receiving, Sal. I think he gets that done at plus 105, solid number.
Bri, I hope you're wrong about Saquon Barkley blowing up on my rival Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, look, Sal, I'm taking Saquon to record 500-plus regular season receiving yards at plus 460. I think that's a high number. Look, Barkley hasn't eclipsed this number since his rookie season when he had 721 receiving yards, but the Eagles should be more creative in getting him the ball. They got to use his receiving skills more than the Giants did the last few years. You know, this Eagles offense needs another dimension, right? He needs to be what McCaffrey was for the 49ers. They didn't bring him in here for 300 carries. They got to find ways to get him the ball in open space. So I kind of like the 500 receiving yards or more at plus 460.
All right, I'm going to go Tony Pollard parlay, kid. You know, adios. We liked what he did with the Cowboys a couple of years ago. Had that injury, a really bad one in San Francisco. Couldn't really bounce back. Seemed 40% slower, even though he went over his number last year of 1,000 yards. Yeah. I'm going under 6.5 touchdown runs, minus 118. In his five seasons, he's only gone over 6 once. That was two seasons ago, the big one, when he had 9. He and Tyjae Spears are going to split carries. I'm not sure about Pollard's durability. May not even make it through the whole season. And I know this high number is based on the fact that Henry got 12 last year. He got double digits with the Titans every year. Different kind of back. I just don't see it. Give me under 6.5 touchdown runs for Tony Pollard. All right, there you go, fellas. We did. So as long as they don't sign any more free agents, I think we're good. We're good? All right. By the way, speaking of players moving to new teams, Harry, Kirk Cousins moving on to Atlanta, and your nemesis Sam Darnold now in Minnesota. Does that mean you're a Falcons guy now? Never mind.
It may be. I haven't decided yet. I'm still leaning towards Detroit, but I tell you what, with Darnold in Minnesota, I am off the Vikings for good.
All right, good. You have 6 months to figure it out. Don't break your brain. We're going to close things out when we return next on Cousin Sal's Winning Weekend. Thanks, fellas. Hey, that does it for this week. My thanks again to my actual cousin, Jimmy Kimmel, and as always, my adopted cousins, the D3, Harry, Parley Kid, Brother Bri. Thanks to all of you for watching and listening, and please, always remember, you may feel like an underdog, but just know, you're all my favorite. Happy handicapping!